We'll call to order at 8:31. Excuse me, sorry. The mission of the board is to protect the public by setting educational and training standards for licensure and by reviewing complaints made against osteopathic physicians, interns, and residents to ensure their conduct meets the standards of the profession as defined by law, ARS 32-1854. Now, Mr. Bohall, can we have a roll call and review of the agenda?
Yes, sir. Dr. Oda is absent. Dr. Walker.
Present.
Mr. Berg.
Present.
Mr. Goodman is absent. Dr. Shipog.
Present.
Dr. Matem.
Present.
And Dr. Erbsdorfer is absent. You have a quorum, sir.
Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome the medical students, Midwestern University, Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine, A.T. Still University, Kirksville College of Osteopathic Medicine, and A.T. Still University, School of Osteopathic Medicine in Arizona. Do we have students present today, Mr. Bohall?
Yes, we do.
Well, students, please pay attention. There will be a test at the end. Do you think I'm joking about that, Mr. Bohall?
Absolutely not.
Do we have any members of the public registered to speak?
No one has signed in to speak at this time.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to item four, review and consideration approval of the minutes. Do we have a quorum for moving on the minutes from December 2nd?
We do not, as Mr. Berg will need to recuse.
Copy that.
So we can place those on next month's agenda and the same for the executive session minutes.
Of course. That's perfect.
Thank you.
On to item number five, review, discussion, and action on investigative hearings pursuant to ARS 32-1855E. We have item number A is DO 220105A, Peter Bianca. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. Is that correct?
I believe Dr. Bianco is present. Dr. Bianco, if you would like to turn on your camera and your microphone for the hearing. Thank you, Dr. Bianco.
I appreciate that. Did I get close on your name? I'd like not to mutilate it. You're on mute right now, sir.
Doctor, your mic is muted.
There we go.
Bianco.
Bianco? Okay. Please feel free to correct me if I mutilate your name. I really don't want to do that. Mr. Bohall, is there somebody representing the OMC?
The OMC, we will confirm, we did confirm that the OMC will be in attendance. He was going to call in. I'll go ahead and reach out to him to let him know. But we do have Dr. Prah able to provide a summary of the case.
Before we get to Dr. Prah, is there anybody representing the patient?
No, sir.
Copy that. Thank you very much. Dr. Prah, please go ahead.
This case was sent for expert review by Dr. Garen Hale, a board-certified OB-GYN. The complaint is a malpractice case that was settled on Dr. Bianco's behalf. The malpractice case alleges wrongful death of a 28-year-old female. The patient had an incomplete miscarriage during her third pregnancy. Dr. Bianco performed a suction DNC, but the patient began to bleed during the procedure. The bleeding seemed to stop with medication, but before the patient had left the OR, she began to bleed again, and the nurses summoned Dr. Bianco to return to the OR, where he performed another DNC. She continued to bleed, so an emergency hysterectomy was performed. The patient was transfused. During the procedure, unfortunately, the patient coded and was not able to be resuscitated. Dr. Hale, the expert for the board, felt that Dr. Bianco may have fallen below the standard of care in four different areas. One, he noted there was a lack of follow-up on the patient's hemoglobin. He states there was only one hemoglobin done on her initial OB visit. He stated that the patient may have been anemic prior to the beginning of the first DNC. He also noted that placenta accreta is not an uncommon occurrence in previously C-sectioned patients and should have been suspected early on. He notes that placenta accreta frequently requires a hysterectomy because of excessive blood loss. He also noted that he felt Dr. Bianco should have entered the abdomen with a midline incision during the emergency hysterectomy. He notes entering the abdomen through the old C-section scar takes several minutes, whereas a midline incision takes less than 1 minute. He noted that once the abdomen was open, clamping of the uterine arteries should have been the first procedure to decrease the blood loss instead of clamping and tying the adjoining ligaments and moving the bladder. He also notes a hysterectomy should have been done earlier, after the first DNC, when the bleeding in such large quantities occurred. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Pra. Dr. Bianco, I'm sorry you're here before the board. I know these cases take a toll on physicians. I know you've relived this in malpractice and probably many other times, but obviously we take these complaints and events seriously. But could you start, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your practice?
Yeah, I am a board certified OBGYN. I was in practice in Colorado Springs for 35 years, currently retired for the last 4 years. I did a large volume of patients, probably 250 deliveries per year, per month, 3,000 deliveries a year, and 1,500 to 2,000 surgeries per year. And like I said, currently retired.
And could you tell us a little bit about this case?
Yes, a patient originally presented to me early gestation.
I apologize. I'm sorry to interrupt. Mr. President, if we can have him sworn in as a witness.
Oh, I'm so sorry about that. Thank you very much for reminding me, Mr. Bohal. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Dr. Bianco, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Yes.
Thank you. Go ahead, Dr. Bianco.
So presented to me early in gestation with pregnancy, she was evaluated and noted to have a 5-week gestational sac. So we did continually follow up on a weekly basis because of her history of gestational diabetes with her previous pregnancy. We did note that she had an empty uterine sac after sonographic evaluation, and offered to give her Cytotec in order to expedite her miscarriage non-surgically. She did have an initial hemoglobin as part of her prenatal blood work. She didn't have any follow-up hemoglobin since that is not what we normally would do with pregnancy. And she had no history of bleeding prior to being admitted to the hospital. Initial Cytotec did not work in completing her miscarriage. A second dose was tried. That was unsuccessful as well. I offered her a DNC. She wanted to try a third Cytotec insertion, which I did go ahead and expedite, and she still had bleeding and cramping, but never completed her miscarriage. I have to note that it is extremely difficult to diagnose a placenta, and it was not an accreta, it was an increta, which is the placenta actually perforating through the muscle of the uterus. It's very difficult to make that assessment on ultrasound. Therefore, it was not suspected or diagnosed preoperatively. When she failed on the third Cytotec treatment, we elected to put her in the hospital and do a suction curettage. The initial suction curettage was quote unquote successful. Patient did well, no issues. However, within a few minutes after the suction, she began to have heavy bleeding. I suspected there were retained products of conception. I went back, and we gave her Cytotec in addition to repeating the DNC, in which case her bleeding again stopped. They began to wake the patient up, and she was awake when she had another episode of hemorrhage. At this point, I used transoxamic acid and Cytotec in order to control the bleeding. Bleeding again stopped. In the meantime, the anesthesiologist noted that her vitals were in danger, and she subsequently began to administer blood, et cetera. At that point, since she was not actively bleeding, I waited. She's 24 years old. My consideration was that she did want more children, and I did not want to proceed to hysterectomy at that point unless absolutely necessary. The trauma surgeon for the on call for the hospital came in. We noted she did again have bleeding, and therefore went ahead and proceeded with a hysterectomy. I think thinking is that you can enter the abdomen with a vertical incision very quickly. I'm very skilled at what I do. A low transverse incision, I was within the abdomen within a minute. The second issue with clamping the uterine arteries, again, I do understand that point, but the trauma surgeon and I had quickly reached uterine arteries within a minute or less and did clamp the uterines at that point. So I'm not contesting that issue, except that I did operate expeditiously. At that point, the patient coded on the OR. We stopped the procedure with the uterine arteries clamped, and they were unable to resuscitate the patient. That's my summary of what happened. I'm sure you can understand that I do live with this every day, and I do consider what I could have done different, and certainly I think about, yeah, I should have done that hysterectomy sooner. That's what I think about. The case was reviewed objectively by University of Colorado Hospital staff, because they certainly reviewed this case. They found no fault in my care. Also, an outside expert reviewed the case and thought I had proceeded in an appropriate manner, following standard of care, and did not find negligence with the case. Last thing I'll say is I elected to settle because I felt because it's an early maternal death, my chances of becoming successful in winning this suit were not very good, and I thought it would be best to settle. End of my career. It's just what I wanted to do.
I understand. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. That was a very good summary. You addressed most of our outside medical consultants' concerns. Did you, or do you typically, or do you think you should have had a closer hemoglobin to the time of the event before?
Prior to it, no. I don't think so, only because the two reasons. Number one, we don't normally do an early hemoglobin. We do one in the prenatal profile, but we don't do a follow-up so soon. Our next hemoglobin would normally be about 28 weeks. Patient did not have any bleeding in the antepartum period, so I didn't see the need. And secondly, it's also not required as part of the pre-op workup by the university hospital.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much, Dr. Bianco. Mr. Bohol, do we have the OMC on the line?
Yes, the medical consultant is present on the phone if the board members have any questions.
Could you start with responding to what Dr. Bianco mentioned about his difficult to assess by ultrasound and the delay in the hysterectomy, considering patient's consideration of fertility, and his approach and timeliness with his skill?
Sorry, Dr. Hale, we can't hear you. If you,
I'm sorry, I got on the line late, and I didn't hear the first part of the conversation. My question about this case was, I was never quite clear how much blood this patient lost. The first note was that he did the DNC, and the op report that I read said that a considerable amount of blood loss was present there. I don't know what a considerable amount means. I mean, most of the stuff evacuated with a suction curette goes into a bottle, and the bottle's calibrated, and it would have been easy to look at the bottle to see what the blood loss was there. Then he mentions that he gave a side attack, and the uterus was small and firm and still bleeding, and I wonder why the thought didn't come up. Was there a perforation? If the uterus is firm and still bleeding, I would think a perforation would be considered. It's certainly a common thing with previous C-sections. Of course, the other thing was the placenta accreta, which is a possibility, but perforation is very common on a pregnant uterus, and that would have also led to bleeding. I think if she had been opened at that time, could have just clamped the urinary arteries and left the uterus in, probably. She could have retained her fertility, so that was one of my concerns. I guess the concern I read that I got mostly when I read through the records was just how much blood was being lost. The woman starts out with about eight pints of blood, and she lost a considerable amount. Then she lost 500, then she lost 1,500. That totals up to an awful lot of blood, and obviously that's why she expired. It just seemed like it wasn't kept up with during the whole process.
So, Dr. Hale, was part of your consideration the charting of volume of blood loss, or what exactly was your concern there?
Yeah, that was concerned that it didn't seem like it was being kept up. And according to the report I read, that he left the room several times and then was called back. And it just seems like he should have stayed there while the patient was not completely stable.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And to the rest of the board, does anybody have any questions for the outside medical consultant, Dr. Hale or Dr. Bianco? Please go ahead.
May I comment?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Dr. Bianco. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I certainly appreciate the expert's comments. To be more specific, I don't know if this helps answer some of these questions. Initially, when the DNC was done, there was a normal amount of blood loss. I have to say first, though, that I do agree with the consultant that there was no accurate assessment of blood loss. And I think that would have been important in this case. And the hospital has made certain changes to assessing that in the operating room across all specialties. So I think that is a very legitimate concern and comment. Once I did complete the DNC, the initial one, there was no further blood loss, and the amount of blood loss with the DNC was normal. I did leave the OR once the patient was beginning to wake up because I had a patient up in labor and delivery that I needed to evaluate and care for. However, once the call came up to L&D, they knew where I was. The OR did know where I was, and I immediately came down to take care of the patient, and it's at that point that I noticed that the patient had a significant bleed. It was post-DNC. I left the OR a second time when the patient began to actually wake up and talk to the anesthesiologist out of anesthesia, and all of these times, the bleeding had stopped. There was not active and ongoing bleeding. And I did go outside the operating room, not back upstairs, but just outside, and then I was immediately called back. So I just wanted to address that issue. The final one is that it was an increta, which is very different from an accreta. And I emphasize again, very difficult to assess that early in pregnancy with ultrasound. Certainly can be assessed later. A perforation was considered, but based on my OR technique, I did not think that was the issue. Pathology report post did not indicate there was any evidence of perforation. The bleeding was purely from an increta, and that is a very rare event to have that kind of bleeding so early in pregnancy.
No, I appreciate that, Dr. Bianco. I'm not a surgeon. What I could read from that flow of events did not seem unreasonable from my perspective, from your timeliness between responses. For the board members, that's in the 1,700-page document. The section's in the 200s-page range there, if you haven't had a chance to look through it. But I thought that seemed reasonable. Also, the MTP, the massive transfusion protocol, Methogen and TXA use seemed very reasonable for the later part of the situation. Could I ask a question of you, Dr. Hale, with the timeliness between the three stages of the events, the initial DNC, the follow-up DNC, and the emergent hysterectomy? Did the time frame, do you read that there was unnecessary delays, as far as you could tell from the situation, or did the flow seem reasonable?
Well, of course, I wasn't there, and it's hard to tell all that from
I know.
Just reading the record.
Best assessment.
I think after the DNC and after the first bleed, I think serious consideration should have been to open the patient, whether he did a transverse or vertically. It wasn't as urgent at that point, but certainly after a DNC and then losing 500 more cc's, it indicates that probably the uterus is pretty cleaned out. He said it was firm and small. So once again, I think other considerations should have been taken. Once again, the perforation is really common, particularly after previous C-section. That wasn't what happened, but it was an increta, and that's the other possibility. But I think it would have been prudent to maybe open her at that point. It's easy to make that judgment in retrospect, but that would have been the thing to do.
I appreciate your opinion on that. And I'm sorry, back to the rest of the board. Does anybody have any questions?
No.
So aggravating factors, obviously we have a bad outcome. And hindsight, certainly a strong consideration of taking the patient for emergent hysterectomy earlier. And as far as mitigating factors, aggressive resuscitation, back to aggravating, probably not great documentation on blood loss. Do I have a motion on the floor? I'm going to give this one to you, Dr. Chabon. Or Mr. Berg, you can speak up if you're off mute.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did. Take a look at one item here.
I apologize. I didn't have any other questions about the case, and thank you so much for explaining all of that and reliving that. Dr. Bianco, I just had one question about, you said you're currently retired at
yes.
this point? Or and so are you still, you're practicing and you're just renewing your license or completing your license, or are you practicing at all any?
I'm permanently retired. I'm just renewing the license. That's all.
Okay.
I'll make a motion for dismissal. I think this is a bad outcome. It's unfortunate, but I'm satisfied with the doctor's responses.
I will second that, Dr. Walker.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. We have a motion on the floor for dismissal. It has been seconded. Is there any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. That's an aye for me. So, Dr. Bianco, again, we take this very seriously. If this was something that had been a repetitive problem, obviously we'd have more concerns. I know you've learned a lot from this, and it was several years ago, and we certainly grieve for the family, but this case is dismissed. I really appreciate your presence, and Dr. Hale, I appreciate you taking the time to log on.
Can I just express my sympathy for Dr. Bianco? A surgeon that has that happen to one of his patients just leaves a mark on his life that he has to live with, and I feel sorry for him.
Thank you very much for saying that, Dr. Hale, and I have to repeat what I said earlier. I'm sorry before the board. I can't imagine what you've lived through. I know you feel for your patients by what I've heard about you, so thank you very much for being here and being before the board.
I want to thank the board for their consideration and sympathy. I do appreciate it, and I wish you all well.
Thank you. Mr. Bohol, can we move on to the next case? I believe that's Dr. Sheards, if I'm saying that correct, DO-230128A.
That is correct, and Dr. Sheard and his attorney are signed in to speak.
Perfect. Before I forget again, would you like to swear in the doctor?
Thank you.
Dr. Sheard, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. And Mr. Bohol, I assume nobody's representing the complaint?
No one is signed in to speak for the patient.
Thank you. Who's presenting this case?
Actually, I'm going to step in. I'm going to move myself because I'm in the sun. Mr. Milligan and I have had a discussion. There was a presentation of a potential consent agreement to resolve and address this issue. The terms discussed would be... Let me pull that up. I apologize. Would be a seed revocation. Apologize.
Mr. Bohol, to properly, because this is an informal, to properly call the case, will you go ahead and do a summary?
Sure.
So it's everything is on the record.
Thank you. I will defer to Dr. Prof. Dr. Prof, if you could provide your summary.
Bra? I believe this is Lindsay's case, but I will try to...
I apologize. I have it in my head incorrectly.
Lindsay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
The case before us, this complaint was received... by the hospital. It was the allegations of an improper relationship with a patient.
Actually, I think I can do it. I just need to...
Either way.
Whoever gets to it first, my computer is very slow right now.
That's okay. Dr. Pratt, if you're up, you can go ahead.
I apologize.
It's okay.
The complaint came from Dana Medical Group, and Dr. Shear has seen the patient for anxiety and depression and admitted to having an improper relationship with the patient, the sexual relationship. There were no records provided. when subpoenas from Dana, we don't have any medical records of the patient or even the we were unable to receive any of the patient records. And we were unable to receive any of the personnel file of their investigation as well. And this was the subpoena.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. Justin?
So the presentation of a proposed consent agreement would include a stayed revocation, issuing a decree of censure, a practice restriction to working in a non-solo clinic, a chaperone for at least 5 years with all female patients, as well as some continuing education in prescribing. Doctor has completed a professional boundaries course that he would like the board to consider as part of the consent agreement. If the board requires continuing education in boundaries, that he's already successfully completed that for your consideration. Additionally, I believe that he would need to obtain a board-approved primary care physician as well as a psychiatrist.
And Mr. Bohol, can I direct you to complete that consent agreement, or do we need a vote, or Ms. Galvin?
So what I would be requesting is a vote to accept the proposed consent agreement and delegate to the director terms to negotiate, for final settlement authority, to be able to resolve this complaint, this case, draft the agreement, work with Mr. Milligan and his client, get a signature, and then issue the order.
If I may seek clarification, the consent agreement, I would appreciate articulation of the violations. There is an admission that at least one inappropriate relationship did occur. There were findings, the doctor's admission, that there were possibly other inappropriate encounters during his career. The stayed revocation, a decree of censure, the practice restriction limiting him to a group practice only, and a chaperone, a female chaperone present when he is examining, treating, consulting with a female patient. Is this practice restriction for what period of time? And I assume that that's a term of probation?
Yes.
And for what period of time?
5 years.
I find that acceptable. That being said, I would like to add into that consent agreement some further amount of CME for boundaries, unless you think the course that was taken is adequate. I've not had a chance to look through the CME that was done already.
Thank you. It was a 36 hours PBI course. It is one that we have used before. I believe that PACE has a course, and I believe it's 42 hours, so it's comparable.
No, in that case, I'm absolutely fine with what was done. Our job here is to protect the public and uphold the standards. The stayed revocation with the female chaperone and practice restrictions, et cetera, as you described, will have that taken care of without adding additional CME if that was one of the courses that we use. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So I would like to note the concern with a violation secondary to endangering the public with an inappropriate relationship with a patient and suspected inappropriate relationship with other patients. That being said, I would like to make a motion for the executive director to move forward with negotiation of the terms of the stayed revocation, female chaperone presence during interactions with female patients, and practice restriction for 5 years. Did I forget something, Mr. Bohol?
CME for prescribing.
And CME for prescribing hours and time frame to be discussed with Mr. Bohol. Did I cover that?
Yes.
That is my motion.
I'll second.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
We do need a roll call.
Very good. Go ahead with the roll call.
Yes. Dr. Walker?
Agreed.
Mr. Berg?
Aye.
Dr. Shibon?
Yes.
Dr. Matum?
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Shears. And I'm sorry, is Mr. Milligan, was he actually there? Oh, yeah, there.
I'm a coroner, and hello. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Can we move on to item number C, unless I assume nobody needs a biologic break yet? Okay, let's move on to item number C, DO22-0138A, Dr. Travis Lamb. Mr. Boho, would you like to swear in the doctor?
Thank you.
Dr. Lamb, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. Who's presenting this case, Mr. Boho?
I can provide a brief summary for you.
Thank you.
On or about November 7, 2022, the board received an anonymous complaint alleging that Dr. Travis Scott Lamb failed to report an arrest and was charged with a DUI in September of 2010 and failed to disclose that arrest during his application and review process. During the course of the investigation, it was confirmed that the applicant was arrested in California, but the case was dismissed ultimately. Part of the investigation and discussion, it was determined that a proposed consent agreement for a non-disciplinary letter of concern for failing to properly disclose the arrest as part of the application process would be appropriate. If the board would like to consider resolving the case through a non-disciplinary letter of concern.
Is there any further discussion? I'm sorry, is Dr. Lamb present?
I'm here.
Do you have further that you'd like to add to this, Dr. Lamb?
This occurred in 2010, shortly after I finished residency and moved to Arizona. I had already had my license at the time. It was the first time I had applied for a license where I was going to work. I didn't realize that I would need to report any arrests at that time. I went through the legal process and was ultimately found not guilty. And so any subsequent reporting, I didn't think that I had to do. So this came up on an interstate medical application, a license application. And you know, here we are today.
Thank you. Does your attorney have anything to add?
Obviously, I will just reiterate what Dr. Lamb said. It was an arrest and charge, but no ultimate conviction. And of course, this was, you know, almost 14 years ago. And so at the time, he just didn't understand that the charges were reportable when he was arrested and charged. And again, without the subsequent conviction, I think it just, you know, like he said, it didn't come up because he didn't have to report the conviction ultimately. And so, you know, I think in our written response, he acknowledged his error in not reporting the charges within 10 working days as required by statute.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Any questions from the board?
Mr. Chairman, there is kind of one distinction. There was a failure to report under 323208, but then there was a misrepresentation on the application when he stated no, that he had never been arrested or charged. And sure. So we have two issues, and that would be a violation of 321854, I believe it's 9, and a violation of 323208A.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. Any questions from the board? I would like to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern, citing violation 32, 3208A and 18549. I got it. That is my motion.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Lamb. We do take our applications very seriously, and anytime there's a question on an application, please feel free to reach out to the appropriate state. We do have phones, although our staff is really busy. We like to keep you out of trouble. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bohol, where would you like to move next?
I think we're going to hold on Dr. Natkin's application for licensure, as he has not signed in yet. If you'd like to move to 7A, we can discuss the considerations of the request for terminations for board orders.
Perfect. Can we move on to 7A, DO 20-0018A, Joseph Manchuzek, if I'm saying his name correctly?
That's correct.
Thank you. Who's presenting this?
I will present this. So the consideration before the board, Dr. Manchuzek has requested the termination of his probation. On or about July 11th, 2018, the board issued a non-disciplinary order for continuing medical education after reviewing a case. The CME was for professional boundaries and was supposed to be 10 hours in pre-approved CME to be completed within 6 months. On May 29th, the respondent was notified that he was having, the respondent notified the board he was having difficulty finding appropriate courses. In July of 2019, he had identified a program to be scheduled for October 2019, and respondent was approved to take the CME. In November of 2019, he notified the board he had been unable to take the course. In January of 2020, the board opened a case for non-compliance with the order. Subsequent to that, he failed to participate in the board's investigative process, as well as received an additional complaint related to patient care for a repair of that resulted from a surgery. He requested a proposed settlement. The board offered a consent agreement in which he would be issued a creascenture, placed on probation for 1 year to complete the original continuing education in professional ethics, but also an additional 15 hours in medical ethics and professional boundaries, and take the EBAS, the ethics and boundaries examination, and take a 24-hour PBI course, which he completed. He has now requested termination. There's no concerns with his compliance at this point.
Thank you very much. And is Dr. Matruzek present?
I do not see Dr. Matruzek signed up.
Well, that sounds like that was a lot of additional work that could have been avoided. I appreciate it. Any questions or statements from the board? I would like to make a motion for termination of this consent agreement. Is that the correct term, sir?
Correct.
Consent agreement. Do I have a second?
A second.
Thank you, Dr. Chiffon. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Case is closed. Can we move on to D? Is that our next one? DO 16-0133A and DO 17-0148A. Dr. David Eisenberg?
This is correct, and I'll have Dr. Prah provide the summary.
Thank you, Dr. Prah.
Dr. Eisenberg had two cases, one in 2017 and 2018. The first one was 16-0133. They were both inappropriate or overprescribing cases. In the case, the board in May of 2017 restricted Dr. Eisenberg's license for practice restriction of he was unable to prescribe controlled substances or prescribe marijuana. They also ordered him to undergo a PACE evaluation and take CME in medical record keeping. He was to also have a practice monitor for 6 months. Dr. Eisenberg did undergo a PACE evaluation, and he passed with a Category 3, meaning that there were significant issues. PACE recommended, again, the medical record-keeping course as well as the practice monitor. And then when the patient or Dr. Eisenberg came before the board in October 23, 2018, his license restricted or license suspension, or, I'm sorry, he had a license suspension in March of 2018 for the 17-018 case, and pending the results of the PACE evaluation. And then in October of 2018, his license restriction was lifted. He was given a decree of censure. He was placed on probation for 5 years, and he was had to petition for termination of the probation. He had to submit on a weekly basis his CSPMP report to the medical consultant, and also needed to have a practice monitor for 6 months. He also had to pay a $1,000 civil penalty and have 10 hours in medical record keeping. Dr. Eisenberg did send his CSPMP results to the medical consultant for years, did not ever prescribe any controlled substances according to the CSPMP. He did fall off a little bit during COVID, but we did a CSPMP on him recently for the last 3 months. And again, he has not prescribed any opioids at all. And in his letter of termination or request for termination to the board, he stated that he does not plan to start doing that again at any time. One of the reasons that he would like to have his probation terminated is that he obviously lost a lot of insurance carriers during this period of time. And if the board were to lift his termination, he would possibly be able to get back on some health plans.
Thank you, Dr. Propp. Any questions or comments from the board?
I have a question for Dr. Propp. You mentioned that, quote, he fell off a little during COVID, end quote. Do you mean a communication with you or with his prescribing?
I'm sorry, just with the communication.
Okay.
Good question, Dr. Walker. I would have been more concerned otherwise, too.
Yeah.
Any other questions, or do I have a motion?
Thank you, Dr. Pepper, pulling that last. I saw the last 3 months, and there's no scripts from that. So I'd like to make a motion for termination of the consent agreement.
And I will second Dr. Walker.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Motion passed. I appreciate that. Thank you, Dr. Propp. Mr. Bohol, where are we with C, DO-22-0124A, Dr. Jack Hawks?
We do have a positive update. We have drafted a proposed consent agreement for practice restriction with Dr. Hawks. I'll provide a brief summary for that. The board issued a stayed revocation on respondent's license beginning December 9th, 2019 in cases DO-18-0007A and DO-18-0018A. The order required the respondent's license be placed on probation for 7 years and issued a decree of censure. The order permanently restricted respondent's practice in that the respondent is required to have a female chaperone present while examining or treating all female patients in all settings. The terms of the probation also required respondent to complete continuing medical education prescribing controlled substances. The board opened case DO-22-0124A upon receipt of a complaint from Sam's Club and Walmart pharmacies alleging improper prescribing habits. The board selected charts for review to conduct an investigation. In the review, the medical consultant found the respondent fell below the standard of care in that he failed to document medications prescribed, including dosages in the medical records for numerous patients. He prescribed opioids and benzodiazepines concurrently for numerous patients. he failed to perform or document performing genital or rectal examinations for patients prescribed testosterone. He failed to provide a UDS other than initial UDS for two patients who positively tested for illicit substances. Failed to document a CSPMD query in one patient record. Anabolic steroids were used for muscle wasting or atrophy for lower extremities, while oxandrolone was only FDA approved to promote weight gain after extensive surgery, trauma, or infections. In one patient record, the patient's testosterone level was normal prior to starting the replacement and etiology for patient's lower extremity atrophy and was not investigated. He has agreed to sign a consent agreement and has provided that signed agreement that would restrict him to administrative medicine only. He would be prohibited from providing direct patient care or treating any patients in a clinical setting, and he shall not prescribe any medication. He is prohibited from supervising another physician, physician's assistant, nurse practitioner, or any mid-level provider. This would be a permanent restriction on his license. So if the board would like to accept it, it would be a motion to accept the proposed consent agreement and would require a roll call vote.
And is Dr. Hawks here or anybody representing him?
I do not see that they are signed in.
Any questions from the board? Do I have a motion?
I will make that motion to accept the consent agreement as proposed by Mr. Bohol.
Thank you, Dr. Walker.
A second.
Thank you, Dr. Chabon.
A second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Go ahead with the roll call.
Dr. Walker.
Yes.
Mr. Berg.
Yes.
Dr. Chabon.
Yes.
Dr. Madden.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that presentation, too. Mm-hmm. Where would you like to move on to next, Mr. Bohol?
I believe we're still waiting for applicant Eric Natkin. So if we'd like to move on, I can present the legislative update. I have two bills that I believe are interesting for the board members. There's HB 1249 that's related to psychologists and prescribing authority. How I understand the bill is psychologist board would have to approve a new program for psychologists that would determine their ability to prescribe and be trained in that, and then it would require a collaborative agreement with either an osteopathic physician or a medical doctor, and there would have to be a similar agreement to what exists for PAs now. And there would be a approval process between the individual psychology board, medical board, or the osteopathic board, depending on who the psychologist picks as their practice partner, essentially. The bulk of the bill resolves around how a complaint were to be adjudicated. The version that I'm familiar with would, if a complaint on a psychologist prescribing authority was ever submitted, the psychology board would refer it to either the medical board or the osteopathic board. We would conduct the investigation. We would, select a medical consultant to determine what would be appropriate in the standard of care, and that, we would make recommendations on the proposed standard as well as recommendations on resolution, and then that would go back to the psychology board to issue the discipline to the provider. So wanted to make you aware of that. If the board does want to take a particular stance, or if you would like to speak in committee, you just need to let me know and make a motion of that. I am participating in the stakeholder process along with Pat McSorley from the medical board and Heidi Packinen from the psychology board.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Please keep us abreast any of the board members who have interest, please contact me and Mr. Bohol on that. I would appreciate it. Great.
Also, on to 1263. Mm-hmm. This is anesthesiologist assistance licensure. This is a bill that was introduced and didn't go anywhere last year, but it would create essentially a new registration under the medical board and the osteopathic board for anesthesiologist assistance. It would be similar similar requirements related to registration with for medical assistance. It's just an expanded process. There's no real requirement of the board other than the registration and ensuring that the anesthesia assistants are registered and properly trained. And then there's an adjudication route if there was ever a concern about an anesthesiologist assistant's standard of care.
Perfect. Thank you. And where would you like to move to next? We're running out of time for our applicant.
Yes. I'm happy to provide my report for the board member. Well, we can do the report from board members if you'd like on 10A.
Yes, let's go ahead.
Okay. Any board members have anything to report?
No.
I had the chance to go to the FSMB artificial intelligence event in Washington, D.C. Mr. Bohol, unfortunately, had too much ice on his wings to get there and had to get there virtually, if I got the story correct.
That's correct.
I think he just did not want to join me on the East Coast because it was blooming cold there. It was an excellent event. I believe the information is already posted on FSMB's website as far as questions, concerns, and developments in artificial intelligence. Obviously, it's an excellent tool, and it is very much a tool, but, of course, a lot of questions come from where the oversight will be with physicians. If you have a tool that you're using, your responsibility versus the corporation that produces the software's responsibility. I just have to express my concern that we are physicians. We use various tools, but we're still the ones who take care of the patients and are being responsible for them. So my inexpert opinion on artificial intelligence is use the tools that work for you, but consider the potential and the severity of repercussions and whether the tool is appropriate for that task or not. We don't have the choice to be lazy. We don't have to carry around these huge manuals in our lab jacket pocket like we used to in the day, but we get information from various sources, and how we collect and use that information is still up to us. Is that a good enough soapbox?
I think that's perfect.
Any other board reports?
I'm moving to my report then. Let me share my screen. Just wanted to keep you updated. We have had an increase in the number of cases. I attribute it to our new system and the ease of being able to file a complaint. So we are working through those complaints. I did want to note that we had requested an additional resources for our investigations in our budget request that we submitted in August. The executive budget has been provided. The request was not included in the executive budget. I did want to keep the board aware that I am working with the Office of Budget and Strategic Planning Analysis to really convey the need, and hopefully before the budget is finally passed, maybe we can get a correction, and if there's no correction before the fiscal year change, I will again be submitting that request in August for next year's budget, but I will be working to see what information did I not provide that they need to really understand the situation that we're in and what we need to be successful to resolve these complaints in a timely fashion. Regarding budget revenue, we are halfway through our renewals. We're through the bulk of our renewals period. We have received the majority of our funding. We have not received an updated budget report for December yet. So this is just through the end of November. So I do expect this to be much higher when we meet again. We have had a very successful renewal season. I can talk about that. I did want to highlight for the IMLC snapshot this trend of our applications over the last year. The IMLC continues to be a great partner for us, bringing in several applications, not only for licensees in Arizona to be eligible for the compact, but for physicians outside of the state to be able to quickly get a license here in Arizona. In regards to renewals, we have received over 2,000 renewals for the current calendar year. I know a couple of our board members went through the renewal process. Based on feedback that we were getting from physicians, we have made tweaks to the process, especially in the continuing education area, to make it a little bit simpler when you're providing that information. Long-term goals for the renewals, we hope to be able to connect through an API to the Arizona Association of Osteopathic Medicine, as well as the AOA and the ACCME, to be able to directly pull in applicants, licensees, continuing medical education directly into the system, so they would not have to enter it. Only courses that they completed outside those three approved programs would they have to upload. So that's a long-term goal.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you addressing my concerns on that matter, Mr. Ball. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
No problem. And that is one of the benefits that we see in the new system is the option to be able to do something like that.
Perfect.
I think that concludes it for my executive director's report. I did want to highlight back in the budget, part of the executive budget was a proposal to transfer some of our reserve funds to the general fund to address a shortfall in the budgetary process. I am working with the governor's office to avoid that and make it clear that those are the resources of our board and of our licensees, and those funds need to be used for our operations and for our licensees. They should not be transferred to the general fund and treated just as a licensing tax. So I will keep the board updated on that. I will make, I believe the association is aware of that, but I'll confirm that with them on any particular tactic that they have or concern about that. But that addresses my executive director's report, except for the number of dismissed complaints since the last board meeting. We have executively dismissed 12 complaints since the last meeting.
Perfect.
That concludes my report, and I believe Dr. Nefkin is present if you'd like to return to 6A.
Almost. Please, Mr. Bohol, keep me up to date on the funds distribution and the CME for licensing connectivity. That's those are very important areas. So I just want to hear your updates. No pressure, but pressure. Is that fair?
That's pressure, and I accept that.
Okay, thank you very much. Let's move back to six for review and consideration of applications. I see Dr. Natkin is present. Who is presenting this?
This will be Ms. Castro.
Thank you. Go ahead, Lindsay.
Okay. Staff received an application for Dr. Eric Natkin in May of 2023. On the application, Dr. Natkin answered yes to having had any disciplinary action, restrictions, or limitations taken on his license. Dr. Natkin stated he was wrongfully terminated from orthopedic residency year 4 in 2013 from Good Samaritan Regional Medical Center in Oregon. Did Samaritan Medical Center confirm that Dr. Matson was placed on academic probation several times for unprofessional behavior and failing to meet academic standards of professional conduct? They further stated Dr. Matson received numerous evaluations critiquing his communication and professionalism skills. He was also disciplined for attempting to make a particular attending physician look bad at a fractured conference. The program has not provided staff any supporting documentation. Board staff has confirmed that the Oregon Medical Board conducted an investigation in the matter and took no action. Dr. Matson also holds a license in Utah with no disciplinary action.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lindsay. I appreciate it. Dr. Matson, do you have any representative with you?
No, just myself.
Oh, please. Please go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself, your practice, and this application.
Sure. I actually practice in Utah and Colorado. So I have licenses in both states, and I've been licensed in both states in 2014. Never had any complaints or disciplinary actions against my license. Everything that Good Samaritan is saying is untrue. That's a very long story that I don't want to go into, but it's untrue. So I was never ever on probation. There was never any patient care concerns. Oregon State Medical Board made an investigation, because that's what happens when you lose your license, and they found me innocent of any of those charges as well. So.
Thank you very much, Dr. Natkin. I appreciate that. Are there any questions from the board? Go ahead, Dr. Chiffon.
Hi, Dr. Megan. Good morning. Thanks for coming. Just a couple questions. So you did not complete an orthopedic residency, is that correct?
I did not.
So, did you complete a residency or?
I have not. So I did a surgical internship here in Colorado, and then I did three and almost a half years in orthopedic residency in Oregon. So I'm not board eligible.
And can you talk a little bit about your scope of practice that you're currently practicing in and plan in Arizona?
Yeah. I do health and wellness. So I do hormone optimization, anti-aging, a little bit of sexual dysfunction. So.
That's what you're planning in Arizona as well, or?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly. So I do that in Utah and Colorado, and I'm hoping to expand into Arizona. So.
And you mentioned something about pain management. Do you practice in that field as well?
I did. I started up in pain management, and I kind of fell into it right out of residency, just because of my orthopedic background. I'm closing down all. I closed down two of my pain clinics, and I'm getting ready to shut down my last pain clinic, which is in Denver. So it's not what I want to do. So it's a very small clinic right now, but it should be gone by the end of the year.
So in Arizona, primarily his practice is biologics and?
Yeah, just hormones.
Hormone that's replacement?
It.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's it. I no pain management, absolutely not. So.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And I'm sorry, Dr. Natkin, what are or were your qualifications with pain management?
Just an orthopedic background, understanding skeletal muscle, pain when surgery is indicated. I play basically quarterback, referring to either surgery if you need surgery or interventions like spinal interventions. My niche kind of is getting people on high. I took over a clinic that really bad practitioner, ridiculous opioid prescriptions, and my niche was getting people on high opioids, either off opioids or at least a lower dose so they could, you know, safely treated. So that's what I did.
And just to confirm, you're not planning on practicing any pain management in Arizona?
Zero chance of that.
And this is not an accusatory thing, but just for medical students, the area that you choose to practice, you're held to that practice standard. So if you practice pain management in Arizona, you'll be held to the standard of somebody who is board certified, board trained, or has specialty training in that area. And again, this is not not attacking
sure.
you, Dr.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, it was out of control opioids. It's definitely not a great field to be in. A lot of abuse there. One of the reasons why I don't like being in that field.
So. I appreciate that. What is your training in hormonal replacement, anti-aging, et cetera?
I did some classes with Dr. DeRosa. She's actually in Arizona, in Scottsdale area. I trained with her. I trained with a gentleman in Baltimore, and just a lot of online classes. So,
thank you. Further questions from the board?
Dr. Nakin, good morning. Just a quick question. Your practice in Arizona, is it going to be telemedicine, or are you going to have a brick and mortar?
I'll do a brick and mortar, 100%.
Okay.
So I plan to be down there and set up shop, and then I want to find a local provider to actually run that clinic. So that's kind of my goal.
Thank you. Mr. Berg, do you have any questions?
I do not.
Do I have a motion?
I'd like to make a motion to grant an unrestricted license in Arizona.
Thank you, Dr. Chabon. Do I have a second?
Second.
I'll give it to Mr. Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Well, thank you very much for your time and your consideration. I really appreciate it.
Hold on. Any opposed?
Oh. Darn. Right,
lose it right there, Dr. Nakin. Motion passes. Thank you very much. Thank you for your time, Dr.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a good day.
Thank you, you also. Mr. Bohol, does that move us to the students, or where are we?
Yes, we'll invite the students in. I apologize, board members. My Zoom meeting just crashed, so I'm stepping into Lindsay's office, but... we will invite the medical students to join while I get my Zoom back up.
Very good.
Thank you.
I can tell you're very frozen there, Mr. Bohol, just like you were in Houston or something like that.
Mr. President, I did want to let you know that I am back in the meeting.
It's good to see you again, Mr. Ball. Non-frozen. So just let me know when we're good, Mr. Ball.
And medical students, as you're joining, please turn on your cameras. We're eager to interact with you and see you this morning. I think you are good to go, Mr. Professor.
Whoever I am. Yeah, you young student doctors get to grow up in this online meeting platform here. But we do go out of our way to try to keep it human using our cameras. We do that, as you could see, with the doctors who come before the board, too. We lose so much in communication, so I appreciate you humoring us by turning on your cameras. We appreciate you being here. So to put it out there, personally, I'm a huge fan of learning. The main thing that being a doctor taught me is I know just such a small fraction of what I want to learn. I've been doing this job in emergency medicine for over 25 years and still have not learned what I want to. So I try to make it a point to try to learn something every day. And my personal habit is actually to make it three things and then review those things during the day here. So can any of you student doctors tell me something that you have learned from today's meeting? Please feel free just to unmute and speak up here. We'll control you if there's too many people at the same time.
Yeah, coming in today, I was thinking that the board was going to be critiquing every little thing for different cases for the physician, but it seems like the board tries to put themselves in the situation of when things happen rather than, you know, hindsight's 20/20. So it, objectively looking at what would I have done or what would be the standard of care in that moment, particularly with the first case where a diagnosis was later made of placenta increta, but at the time wasn't known. I think the board does a good job at looking at that from the past perspective rather than from the future. So I'm a little less afraid of the board going back and critiquing every little thing than I guess I was before.
Thank you very much, student Dr. Glass. And perhaps I did my job wrong if you're not afraid of us, but I'll work on that in the future. That's perfect. Oh, I should also say we can't speak directly of any particular case, but we can use general examples. You're absolutely fine, student Dr. Glass, here. You're not going to get arrested or be put in front of the board for that.
That's good to hear.
Did anybody else learn anything?
I think it was interesting how one of the cases, the incident had taken place many, many years prior. I thought that was interesting, and just kind of keeping that in mind how, you know, our actions even now have, like, and previously have big impact on our careers. I thought that was interesting.
Oh, that's excellent insight. And Dr. Prague will teach you a little bit more about that in just a little bit. So, no, that's absolutely perfect. That's what I want to hear. Let me just tell you a little bit about the board real quick while I can hear. The board staff does so much in the background that you can't see. Lindsay Castro, Dr. Prague, Justin Bohall, and our multiple other assistants. Gene Galvin, our assistant attorney general, tries to keep me from being put in jail for the things I say. And you've done an okay job so far, Ms. Galvin. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But you can also see we have, obviously, physician members. Dr. Chapon and Dr. Walker are physician members that are present today. We have others. And Mr. Berg is our public member. This board's here to protect the public, and it has public members as well as physician members. And Mr. Berg, our public member present today, gets an equal vote to the rest of us. Because this is about the public. This is not about the physicians. We uphold standards, but we protect the public, if that makes sense. Mr. Bohall or any of our other staff, is there anything else about the board itself that you think would be helpful for the medical students?
Just that the board members are appointed by the governor, and they work very hard working through a case, as you mentioned, really putting themselves into the shoes of the licensee who's before the board and saying, what would I have done in this situation? And truly focusing on if there was a mistake or an action that was taken that was inappropriate, what do they do to remediate that, fix that, and improve the situation overall? And they take that job seriously.
Thank you. Ms. Galvin or Ms. Castro, do you have anything to add?
I can speak a little bit about the role of the Assistant Attorney General to the board. We provide legal guidance, legal counsel to the board as a whole, to the entity. We work through the staff. They are our agency contacts, and we assist them you know, very frequently, sometimes daily, on issues they may have. You heard discussion about consent agreements that have been negotiated and researched. The Attorney General, if not drafting the consent agreement, will review any consent agreement before it is finalized. during the meeting, I will advise the board on open meeting law issues, perhaps potential conflicts of interest. I often have discussions with individual board members prior to meetings about whether they have to recuse if they have a potential conflict of interest. I will also, although none happened today during the meeting, the board is allowed under statute to go into executive session, and that is for the purpose typically of receiving legal advice or reviewing confidential health records or health information. And those are meetings that are allowed to take place outside of the public, off the public record. There are particular instances and reasons that you can have an executive session. Otherwise, the meeting has to be held and open. We did not have any of those executive sessions today, but they do happen frequently. And I'm available to any board member anytime if they have any questions or, of course, during the meeting itself.
And you didn't get to see, thank you very much, Ms. Galvin. You didn't get to see it very much, but we use Ms. Galvin a lot. You've been a very important person to help this board. I really appreciate all the hard work that you
thank
do.
You.
There's a lot to this, and the Assistant Attorney General helps a lot. Ms. Castor, did you have anything you'd like to add?
Yes, I would add, when you are applying for a license with the board, it is extremely important that you are 100% transparent and honest on your application, that you're reading every question and answering it truthfully. It's your responsibility. It's not your spouse's or your staff's. It is your responsibility. It's your license. When we do conduct an investigation, it's also important that you cooperate with the investigation, that you're responsive to staff, and that you are providing the documentation that we're requesting. And it may seem like, why do you need this information? But it's because the board wants to be as thorough as possible so that they can put themselves in your shoes with that information to really evaluate and make, you know, decisions. We want to make sure that we're upholding the educational standards and also the standards of the profession in conducting very thorough investigations.
And that was perfect, Ms. Castro. Thank you very much. And I tend to be a little bit short during each one of these cases, but some of these cases, like I mentioned, that one of them, the primary document, was 1,764 pages long. So the reason we can be so concise is we go over all this information before the meeting so we don't have to pull it apart. Otherwise, these meetings would probably go for days. So all the work that Ms. Castro and other staff members do in the background in providing us this information helps give us an efficient meeting. So I really appreciate that. Thank you very much. And we have multiple other staff members besides Dr. Pryor. I'll get to you a little bit if you don't mind. But are any of the other staff members here?
I believe we have our operations coordinator, Kelly Mikhailov.
Oh, really? Would Kelly like to say anything from her perspective?
I have my 5-year-old here with me, so I'm sorry. oh my goodness, I am so sorry. He's very excited.
That's fine.
I just want to say, I'm kind of just to piggyback off what Lindsay was saying. That's just what I've noticed is just being honest, giving the full truth, don't hide anything. And I've noticed too with the board members is that you guys aren't out. It just seems like you're not out to get these doctors. You really do want to see them succeed and do their best. And, just being honest. And the board will work with you. We want to see you successful and succeed as a doctor. So, yeah, that's all I have to say.
Thank you so much, Kelly. And I like your background, musician. That's fantastic.
Thank you. Thank you.
So we do, like I said, have multiple board members that help support this whole group. You saw some graphs. You might have seen Mr. Bohol pulled up the number of cases we review, and the amount of information is astounding. So periodically we hear people complaining about how the board is not getting things done. We are getting so much done because of all the work the staff is doing, and it makes it easier for this board that you see before us to get this job done. And Dr. Pra, if I could go before you, I'd just like to say one more really important thing from my perspective is you student doctors got to see doctors in this horribly human position of being judged, which is a terrible position to be in. Like I mentioned to one or more of the doctors, it's terrible to be in that position. It's life-altering when something bad happens and you realize that the job you decided to do is something you may have failed at. People will die, people will have bad outcomes, and that weighs on us all. You guys will do your job for decades, and you'll touch many lives, and many of those outcomes are going to be sad. Obviously, most of them will be much more optimistic depending on your job, but it's going to weigh on you. So I just want to make sure you understand that we are still human beings. We will still be affected by our jobs. We'll still be affected by our lives. We'll be affected by all the other people in our lives besides our patients, and it's just important to be human. It's important to be a person. You're not just striving to be a physician. You're striving to be a member of society, a human being who has worth outside of their job and inside of their job. So please take care of yourselves. Don't break yourselves. And most importantly, and this is where I've seen the failings, if you have issues, if things are not working out well, then use your support system. Use your resources. Talk to your significant other, your dog, your cat, or whatever it is, but use resources. And the board itself has resources too. So please don't break yourselves. Please keep in mind you're a human being. We understand that. We are too, and we all have our own issues, and that's what makes us good physicians, is being able to understand our issues, being able to reach out when we need help, which is what patients are doing when they come to you. Is that a good lead-in for you, Dr. Prah?
Yes, thank you.
Could you tell us a little about it yourself for the board first, what you do? Because you do an amazing job here. This is our physician, investigator, and just about everything for ever. How many years have you been with us now for? 25, 30?
25
years. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, sorry.
It flew by. thank you, Dr. Maynham. And yes, I would like to try to kind of tie it all up. And Dr. Maynham is absolutely correct in that while as physicians we are held to a higher standard, which often it seems very unfair, but that's what we're signing up for as professionals. We are held to a higher standard. However, we all are still physicians or humans. And as human beings, we have all of the same possible failings as everyone else, including diseases, including addiction possibilities, drug and alcohol, mental health issues. These are all things that we have to face head on. And the board has, we really do, you can see that everyone that works for the board is very empathetic. And one of the ways that we have tried to help physicians is we created a confidential physicians program many years ago that allows physicians to come to us if they find that they have a problem, for instance, a drug or alcohol problem or a mental health problem. We allow them to come to us and seek help. This is only done if you have not had any action against your license because of the problem, though. So it has to be something that you do head on. If you or you know someone that has an issue with especially drugs or alcohol, the time to treat that and get it taken care of is now. Because I know you all feel like, and you are, you're very busy. I remember being in medical school, there's not enough hours in the day. But believe it or not, your life actually gets busier once you graduate. And so if there's ever a time to seek help, it would be now. And once you're in practice, if you find that you develop a problem, it's important to seek help soon. The reason is that if you were to enter the confidential physicians program for some reason, what the board does is they allow you to be evaluated, first of all, to see what your needs are. And then the person is placed on a probation, but it is confidential. And it allows you the time to get the treatment that you need and be monitored for a period of time to make sure that you're meeting all the qualifications for the requirements that were asked of you. And the reason that it's done confidentially is that, again, we recognize you're human, and we need to help get people well. Like someone else was saying, we want all the physicians in Arizona to be healthy and productive. So it's not to withhold information from the public. It's to really make sure that everybody's really healthy. If the physician isn't able to undergo the requirements that are put upon them, then, you know, there will be actions taken on your license. So it is a real gift for everyone. And again, you have to come before us. You have to ask us for it, or someone can report you as well. And as long as there's not been any issue with, then there's a good chance that you would be able to enter the confidential program. So having said that, I feel like that Dr. I think it was Flinders, if I'm not pronouncing your name right, brought up an important issue, and that is how our pasts affect us. So again, if you're applying for licensure, it's important to always be very honest, because when I see people that come before the board that have had, say, a DUI when they were in medical school, which you would never think in a million years would affect you, because you don't have a license yet, right? If they are honest and they tell the board about it and they've done what they need to do, then the board will, what we want to know is that you're not, there's not an underlying problem with you. And that's the reason that we even ask about it. And so it is true that your past can definitely affect you. And that's another, you know, my main thing to tell you about is absolutely make sure that if you go out and you decide to drink, make sure that you ahead of time make a plan for how you're going to get home. Whether it's a designated driver or whether it's a Lyft or an Uber. It's really important to make that plan ahead of time so that you don't get a DUI or something worse happens to you. Did I forget anything, Dr. Matem?
No, that was absolutely perfect. I really appreciate it. It's very easy to get into trouble. So when you get into trouble, please admit it to yourself, admit it to the appropriate parties, the board, etc., and do what you can to move on. That's perfect. I appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Prahl. And I'm going to go in the order that I have you on my board here. Dr. Walker, would you like to add anything, please?
Yes, thank you. Good morning, everyone. It's unfortunate, Student Glass, that you didn't find us more intimidating. Just, you know. but no, honestly, I appreciated your comment, and I found it funny because that's what I respect so much about this board, is that we are humans, and we look at this as a humanitarian effort from our own selves for our osteopathic colleagues. And the teaching point that I would like to extend that I have seen through my time on the board is understanding from the moment that you're at right now to retirement that your license is your responsibility and nobody else's responsibility. And that's the general theme here. You need to be responsible for your applications. You need to be honest. You need to be transparent. You need to stay sober. You need to take care of your physical and mental well-being. But also, from a business standpoint, you need to protect your license. There's other activities that I've seen physicians get into where there's businesses that they really just want you for the purpose of your license, and it's not a credible business or other associates, medical associates, like, for example, physician assistants that work under your license or medical assistants for that matter. You need to understand that, especially if you have a practice or you're within a clinic and you're a medical director, everything rolls uphill when you're a physician and it's your responsibility. So at the end of the day, you need to protect your license. You need to make sure that you take care of yourself, your financial health, your medical health, and your psychological health. And I wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. I really appreciate that. Mr. Berg?
Yep. Not being a physician on the board, I won't try to tell you anything about medicine, but I work in financial services in my real life, and we have a lot of physicians as clients. One thing that you can do while you are in residency that's probably the most important is to make sure that at some point you sign up for disability insurance during your residency. I'm sure you'll have folks that will come in and talk to you about it. People will kind of push that off to the side. This is going to be the easiest time for you to get that coverage, and that coverage can be increased as your earnings increase throughout your career. However, if something happens to you prior to you getting that coverage, it can be very difficult to get coverage, and something can happen to you at any time. So when you have the opportunity and are able to get that coverage, buy what you can afford at the time, knowing that you can always increase it later. And when you increase it later, they can't judge you for any, typically, they can't judge you for anything that has happened after the policy issued. They're just looking at your change in earnings.
That's perfect. Thank you very much, Mr. Berg. Dr. Chapin?
Everybody had amazing advice today, so I encourage you all to understand what everyone said about from Dr. Pra to Dr. Walker to Dr. Berg. I mean, amazing. Just in light of all that and just your a life lesson, not medical, but try not to sound cliche, but it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. You're here for the long run, so take care of yourself. There's always something to do, always, pressure, always, things on top of your mind that you need to get done. So make sure you take some time, relax, learn some coping mechanisms now because you'll need them. Whether it's meditation or yoga or things, or something else that hiking, something that you enjoy doing, find some time to relax and center yourself. It's important for you, important for your patients, help you become a better doctor. That's all I have there.
Perfect, Dr. Chapin. Thank you. So I opened with this, but you all might not have had your coffee in you yet, so I just want to close with this. The mission of the board is to protect the public by setting educational and training standards for licensure and by reviewing complaints against osteopathic physicians, interns, and residents to ensure the conduct meets the standards of the profession. So just keep in mind that you are going to learn a lot. You're going to learn a lot about standards. You're going to learn a lot about regulations within your specific practice. So please keep in mind to practice what you learn. Do not practice what you haven't. As we mentioned to one of the doctors, practicing outside of your scope is very dangerous. That being said, enjoy each and every day that you get to learn one of these things. Embrace that and keep in mind that you're going into the best profession that you possibly can, and you will all make a difference for years to come. I appreciate you being here. Sorry I'm a little bit of a soapbox person, but thank you very much for listening. Good job, everybody. Log off. Do something more fun than this.
And, thank you.
Yeah, thank you to the rest of the board and board staff. Thank you very much for your work today. I really appreciate the hard work. I have finished my coffee, so I think this meeting is over.
I think that's correct.
Motion to adjourn.
Motion to adjourn? Okay.
I'll motion.
You have a second? Thank you. Any opposed? Seeing none, we're done. Thank you, everybody.
Have a wonderful day.
Take care. Peace,